Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We want to hear from you on Twitter at Illegal Curve. What are your thoughts on Blake Wheeler? If you want, you can even put them on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Tweet us about Blake Wheeler. Tweet us about if you ever own the Green Day Dookie album. Anything that's on your mind on this Saturday.
Whatever you want. Before the break, we were talking about Blake Wheeler and his RFA contract status. And
if only Drew will come around.
Yeah, well, guess what? Anyways, you know.
Drew's a basket case.
That's very clever. Any other Green Day songs you guys want to
I don't know. Wake Me Up When September Ends.
Yeah, is a Canadian idiot.
Yeah, there you go. Attaboy. You guys are doing well. Last week we talked about Zach Bogosian. We thought that there's a reasonable possibility, if negotiations aren't going well and things aren't, you know, things aren't progressing, that Zach Bogosian could receive an offer sheet, given, you know, his pedigree and given his talent level and given his age and everything else. Is that same fear exist with Blake Wheeler, or would you be hard pressed to see him getting an offer sheet?
I would be surprised if he got an offer sheet. I mean, Blake Wheeler's a really good player, but to get Blake Wheeler away from the Jets, you're gonna have to again overpay him, pay significant draft picks. I mean, a trade would be the more likely scenario. I just don't like. I think offer sheets, and we talked about in the article, you know, aside from a Brian Burke, Kevin Lowe barn fight, the offer sheets are generally reserved for the cream of the creme to the creme. So you're talking about, you know, Shea Weber, Thomas Vanek, Sergei Fedorov, Joe Sakic. You're not talking about Blake Wheeler. He's not in that class.
Where does Nicholas Jarmelson and Ryan O'Reilly fit in there?
Well, I mean, fair enough. O'Reilly was taking advantage of a team they didn't think, you know, the way they loaded the contract, they didn't think they would match, and it was stupid, first of all. A second, Chalmerson was simply Doug Wilson trying to stick it to Chicago with cap issues. There's no cap issues for the Jets. They're going to be a mid-cap team, and they certainly have the money to be higher than that.
They have entering the 2013-14 season, currently they have the second lowest salary in the NHL.
So, I mean, you're going to have to overpay and make, it's the offer sheet thing, overpay to a point where the team who owns the player's rights doesn't think he's worth it. Then you have to give up the draft picks. I just don't think the compensation, I just don't think it'll be, I don't think there's a team will be willing to, and you have to have the draft picks to give up those draft picks. I don't think it's a likely scenario.
And Blake Wheeler is not Dustin Penner, who Richie touched on when Edmonton offered the offer sheet. And that's not an insult to Blake Wheeler.
He's better than
Dustin Penner. But I don't think that's a realistic possibility. Right. Anything's possible. But I think Bogo is a much, you gotta think too, when a general manager goes into negotiations and offers a guy an offer sheet, they target that guy. And I'm not so sure. I think there's teams that covet Blake Wheeler that would love to have him on their team, but I don't think they're going to target him and you know, go to the trouble of trying to pluck him from Winnipeg.
The bigger issue is the leverage that Blake Wheeler has, and he's got a lot of it.
Okay, let's talk about that. Now, I mean, he's a arbitration eligible restricted free agent. He would become an unrestricted free agent 2 years from now.
No, 1 year.
Pardon me, 1 year from now. He's 26 years old already. Yeah. 1 year from now, he would become an unrestricted free agent.
Actually, technically, because of his birthday is a little bit later, that's why he was in the UFA this year. So that gives him leverage. You go to, you know, if you look, I don't believe Wheeler's been to arbitration. I signed a 2-year deal and another 2-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or a 1-year deal and a 2-year deal. So the question here is with Blake Wheeler, do you get him to a 1-year deal? Do you have him on a 1-year deal and then risk losing him next year? And I don't think you do, because that's trouble.
Let's say they go to arbitration.
Yeah.
You know, what's the case? Who's got the leverage in an arbitration case? Who has the better case that can be made?
I don't remember who he went to. I think he went to arbitration with the Bruins. Well, I don't recall. If it was after the... I have to check into that. Who has a better case? I think Blake Wheeler's got a really good case for arbitration. I think the Jets would be not happy about, probably the contract he gets, and I think about the 1-year deal. I think the Jets want to avoid arbitration. I think if Wheeler wants to stay here and the Jets want him here, I'd see them avoiding arbitration. Arbitration results in hurt feelings. Arbitration results in short-term deals. And I don't think it's in either person's best interest to sign a short-term deal.
What about a trade possibility?
You know, I don't think so. I think the Jets have no right wingers right now, and the Jets' right wingers are pretty bad. Who do they have? Wheeler and nothing.
Well, then okay, you agreed.
Oh, sorry, that's true.
It's true. We've talked about
Wheeler and nothing.
Well, it's been, you know, 2 years now that we've talked about the need for another top six right winger.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that, knowing how little depth there is, Matt Keeter, Wheeler's agent, use against Kevin Shelvadayoff, saying, right, you know, I'm going to play hardball with you because look at your roster. You got a whole lot of nothing there, buddy.
Yeah, but there's trades you can make and you can address it. But yeah, I think overall, Drew, you're right. I mean, they need a right winger, and they need a right winger who can play on the top line, and he fits that. I think these parties are both looking at each other saying, this is a good fit. Wheeler's on a first line right wing in the Jets. He likes playing here. He likes his line mates. The Jets like what they're getting. He seems to be happy here. The Jets seem to be happy with him. This seems to be a good fit. Now, money-wise, I think it'll be a little bit of an issue, because I think Keeter's going to be thinking his player's worth a little bit more than the Jets probably do think he's worth. So that'll be interesting. But I think for overall fit, Wheeler is a fit here. And I think for the most part, I mean, him and Bogosian are both fits here that the team wants. I think the player probably wants as well. Little is a question in terms of A, value. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. But also, you know, long-term vision for the team and where he fits in. His contract, to me, Little's contract needs to be something that can be reasonable at a second-line center level, as opposed to Wheeler, a little bit different. I think the expectations are higher for a guy of his skill level.
Let me explain that one more time. Little needs to be, even though he's been playing first-line minutes for as a first-line center, needs to be paid like a second-line center, whereas Wheeler, who's been playing first-line right wing, can be paid as a first-line right winger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and when you have to think that when Kevin Cheveldayoff is negotiating with Matt Keeter and Blake Wheeler's camp, you have to think that they're looking at that right wing, that second line, that third line right wing position, and they're saying, okay, Nikolai Antropov is gone. He was playing center and right wing, and Kyle Wellwood might be gone if they don't re-sign him. Then they had Bermie playing in that role. So are they going to maybe use Scheifele, who's a natural center? Are they going to put him as a right winger? Who, and you know, go up and down. You know, you got Santarelli, who's naturally a left winger.
He's also a UFA, though.
UFA, I think there's a chance that they sign him because he was a good waiver wire acquisition.
Do you expect this to be contentious? A contentious negotiation, or do you?
Wheeler went to arbitration with the Bruins, as I thought, after his entry level deal. Do I expect it to be a contentious negotiation?
Well, why? Hang on, let me interrupt you for a second. Why would Wheeler be eligible for arbitration after his entry-level deal expired? You might not know the answer.
Oh,
already.
Why? Because he came out, he didn't start playing until, he wasn't at 18. I think he started in the league at 20 or 21.
So it was an age thing at that point?
Because he didn't sign with Phoenix.
Gotcha. Right. After he was drafted, he spent a number of years in college still.
Yeah, with Minnesota, and then
4 years?
He had the exemption of playing college and opted out. How the Jets got Jason Gregoire, same exemption.
Right, okay. So, you know, back to my question before. Do you expect this to be contentious?
No, not particularly. I think Matt Keeter's, you know, he knows his client's best interests, and I think, frankly, these parties both need each other. And when the parties both need each other, I don't think it's overly contentious.
Yeah, it's like when I'm needed at a party.
Every party needs you, though, as
yeah, exactly. No, but...
For the record, you wished one person a happy birthday. You are going to a second birthday party today. That person might not be that happy that you're not wishing them a happy birthday.
Yeah, I actually work with her, Kyra Winfield. Happy birthday to her. It's her birthday tomorrow. But yes, I will be at a birthday party later today.
I'm covering your behind.
I appreciate that. There's a lot of parties this weekend.
You're a very popular guy.
Hopefully I sleep a little bit this weekend. I don't know if I will, but...
You're a very popular guy.
It can't be contentious because... Blake Wheeler, you could make a strong argument that Blake Wheeler's given them, you know, everything that he can. He's played, he's been relatively healthy. He hasn't missed that much. He's missed a little bit, but he hasn't missed that much hockey. And, you know, he's fit in really well, as Richie said earlier, on that line with Little and Ladd. And, you know, Claude Noel, for all of the mixing and matching that he did with his forward lines, did he ever break up that line? Not very much this year.
Yeah. And apparently they like playing together, too. I think probably a factor as well.
Agreed. I mean, how many years would you sign Blake Wheeler for?
Well, we have him in the article at 4 years. I think 4 years is a reasonable term for a guy who's 26 years old. You take him to his 30 year, you re-examine at that time. I don't think you're giving Blake Wheeler an 8 year deal. I don't think he's that kind of player. I don't even know if he's a 6 year deal kind of player. I think he's a 4 year deal kind of player. Not too short, not too long. You have an idea of what you got. I mean, the guy is mid-20s now. He's not going to become that much better. He's right around his prime, near, you know, close to the middle of his prime, end of his prime. So I think you're happy with a term that takes him to the 30 year, and then you re-examine him on when he's making that switch over to the second half of his career.
Yep. And I think if you sign him to 4 years or 5 years, but even for just 4 years, you're signing a guy, you know what to expect, you're going to get him for, you know, a good price. He's going to be a guy that you're not going to overpay him, whatever you give him, really, in the sense that he's going to be top two, top three as a scorer on your team, and you're going to eat up three of his UFA years. And if he does what he's supposed to do and produces as he has, then, you know, possibly you give him another four-year deal. So I think this one is going to be an easier one, I think. And I think, you know, Richie has done a really good job of covering these deals, because for me, you know, Bogo's a guy that, you know, you possibly think about giving 6 years, even maybe 7 years to. And Little, I think, is the one that is a little bit more tricky. But again, I mean, maybe it's quite possible that the Jets organization looks at all of them the same way, and they don't kind of rate it like that, right?
Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, I want to discuss what you think the final terms of this contract will be and the arguments that will be made by Kevin Cheveldayoff and the arguments that will be made by Blake Wheeler's agent, Matt Keeter. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
I didn't even get to step in and say that.
Okay, hang on.
Is he a mouse or a rat?
Let me just check.
That's Brad Marchand.
Go down the list of the jokes. You haven't got an age joke in yet, so you have about 75 or so minutes in which to get your age joke for the weekend.
Those are easy.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, just letting you know that you haven't hit that benchmark just yet. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, where Ezzy and Richard will be performing later tonight. No, not really. The comedian tonight, Ari Schaefer. Very funny comedian. He's sold not the Ari Schaefer that you know, but...
That was my camp counselor?
Yes, that was your camp counselor. It's a different Ari Schaefer altogether. Tonight's shows, both shows already sold out for Ari Schaefer, but some great comedians coming in next week and throughout the summer. You can give Rumors a call at 204-488-4520. Visit rumorscomedyclub.com, and I can probably guarantee you that he is, yes, Jewish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyways, check him out. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, funny guy is right. Almost as funny as you two, but nobody, that'll just be too much funny right there.
And Steve-O, when is Steve-O? It's coming up.
Steve-O is August 14th through 18th. Some extra shows have been added for Steve-O, so if you missed out on getting your tickets for him the first time around, because those ones went so quickly, other shows have been added. I believe a show on Wednesday night and two shows on Sunday night. So you can go see Steve-O if you missed out. Of course, you know him from Jackass and, you know, Jackass the movie and Jackass 2. And
well, speaking of Jackass, Remus actually just texted me, even though he's just in the other room, and his comment was, you have 75 minutes to get an age joke in, i.e. 1 minute for every year Drew has been alive.
That was actually pretty
Remus woke up and has a joke. Shows up a quarter after one, he's got
he's
a joke.
He's texting me, even though he could have just come on here. We have microphones.
Well, it's easier that he just texted. He may have lost his voice yesterday doing the Bruce Buffer challenge.
Which we mentioned in the first hour, Greg Liverpool won.
That's right. So big win for Greg there. Blake Wheeler.
Remus had a nickname for Greg. Anyhow, we'll talk about
that. It was caller one.
Yeah, caller number one.
Ah, there you go.
That's a good one.
Number one caller here in the station. Arguments that are going to be made by Kevin Cheveldayoff. You're going into the negotiation session. You're going up against Matt Keeter, Blake Wheeler's representative. You're Kevin Cheveldayoff. What are you saying to keep the price of Blake Wheeler low?
Well, you know, I think one thing you want to use, it's the old Detroit method, and Anaheim did it for a while, is, you know, he doesn't deserve that much more money than Andrew Ladd. Andrew Ladd's arguably our best player. Andrew Ladd's making $4.4 million a year. We want there to be a cohesiveness on this team, and I don't know if paying him a lot more than Andrew Ladd is something that we want to do. That's one of your comparables. The other thing is, you talk about the other players who have signed and we've compared them to. I mean, you're looking for $5, $6 million. Well, that's not the marketplace it should be paying, because other players of similar skill and similar talent and similar contractual situation have signed for numbers in the $4 to $5 million range, and that's where we think he belongs. That's what his argument's going to be. And it's going to be an interesting one. There's going to be a lot of posturing on both sides, for sure.
When you look, I agree, but when you look at these comparables, and we're talking Jakub Voracek, P.A. Parenteau, Teddy Purcell, Wayne Simmonds, you're talking about $4 to $4.5 million. And that's why Richie does this. It's so scientific, because you can't really pay Blake Wheeler too much more than a guy like Teddy Purcell, who has emerged kind of similar to Wheeler in the sense that he's kind of become a goal scorer later on. Like, he didn't come in as a 21-year-old or something like that. Purcell's, I believe, 25 now. Maybe check that, but I think Purcell's 25.
I got it right here.
But you're talking
26 now.
26. So you're talking about probably giving Wheeler in that $4 to $4.5 million range. Now, Richie mentions Andrew Ladd, and I think if you're the Jets, I was just going to quickly say one thing, Drew, and then I'll let you jump in. Like, if you're going to enter negotiations and then sign Blake Wheeler to $4.5 million, I don't think there's going to be a big problem signing him for extra $100,000 or whatever. But I do think if you're asking for $5-5.5 million, it's going to be a little bit tough, because then you're asking for top right wing money, right? Like, you're asking for the top echelon of right wingers. And sure, he was fifth in the NHL in goals 1 year, which was this year, fifth in the NHL in assists last year.
For right wingers.
But I don't think, Wheeler's quite in that echelon of $5 or $6 million. But
looking at the numbers, if you're Matt Keeter, you're Blake Wheeler's agent, why are you using Andrew Ladd as the benchmark? Why aren't you using Evander Kane as the benchmark? Looking at the numbers, I mean, you know, Wheeler had more points and more goals than Blake than Evander Kane. Granted, he played with better line mates.
Yeah, and Evander Kane produced that at levels when Blake Wheeler was in college.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. Well, fine, give me those numbers. Well, when Blake Wheeler produced that 5 years ago, then maybe I'd be considering it. But Andrew Ladd, Evander Kane, when he's 26 years old, might be popping 40. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily be comparing those two. I understand the rationale, and they probably toss it out once in a while. But, I mean, let's be real here, too. You know, you're talking about a guy who took a while to develop. Boston gave up on. And, I mean, Peter Chiarelli has obviously proven to be a nice stretch of talent. But he's proven to be a very good player. But I think the expectations for Evander Kane are different than they are for Blake Wheeler on a long-term level. And I think when Evander Kane, who's what now, 2021, when he's 26, different.
And I think if you look back at the contract that Wheeler signed before the Jets started their first season, it's looking like a great deal. $2.5 million a year, was it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good deal. And now, 2 years later, that's exactly where they knew they would be, right? It's time to give him a 4 or 5 year deal.
Matt Keeter's coming into this negotiation saying, hey, he's your top right winger. You don't have anybody else on the right side right now, even if you want to move Byfuglien up there or not. You can make a trade, sure. He's got great chemistry with Ladd and Little. He likes the city. He wants to be there. He's been producing for you guys, top 10 numbers. He plays hard. He wants to win. You're not going to be able to replace him. Nope. You want to do a one-year deal, then fine. But you're not going to be able to replace him. You're not going to get 10 for him if he's pending UFA. So if the leverage in this situation goes to the agent, the leverage in Little's situation, 6 years, they both accrued 6 years, goes to the agent as well. But Little's not as talented of a player, so that's mitigated a bit. In this case, not so much. Wheeler definitely has the hammer when it comes to negotiation power here.
So if he holds that hammer, and I think, I tend to agree with you about the leverage, you know, what number does Matt Keeter come in with in your mind?
You know what, Drew? I think Matt Keeter comes in and says, I think this guy's worth $5.5 million per year. And Kevin Cheveldayoff says he's worth that much more than Parenteau in the open market and Simmonds and Purcell and Voracek, and he's in that next level. And he says, no, he's not. And Cheveldayoff will say, no, he's not.
You mentioned those guys, because those are the guys we used as a comparable. Mm-hmm. Voracek, he was signed for 4 years, $4.25 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
Parenteau, 4 years, $4 million per year. Teddy Purcell, 3 years, $4.5 million a year. Wayne Simmonds, 6 years, $3.975 million per year. All in the same situation, arbitration wise, and
average years accrued of just over 5 years.
Right.
Blake Wheeler will have accrued 6 years.
Parenteau was an unrestricted free agent. Purcell was an unrestricted free agent when they signed their contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Voracek was just coming off his first entry level deal.
Nope, second deal.
Second deal. And Simmonds was coming off of his third deal. This was his third deal, is what I meant. So, I mean, you know, Wheeler's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year.
The average age of those players when they signed was 25. Wheeler's 26. The average contract for those players in terms of NHL contracts was 4.5. This is Wheeler's fourth. Average years accrued was 5.25. This is Wheeler's sixth. The average cap hit and term of those players was 4.25 years. Of course, you can't sign a player for 4.25 years. And the average cap hit was 4.18. And we have Wheeler coming in at 4 years at 4.75. A little bit in excess of those players, but not 5.5.
No. If he went five, if they went 4 years, $20 million, are you okay with that still?
You know,
because you're already over Ladd. You're already over what Ladd has signed for.
Yeah, there's a reasonable number. Because people like flat numbers. There's thresholds here.
The truth is, Ladd is probably underpaid for what he's been performing as of late.
Well, as of late, for sure, yeah. I mean, their expectations probably weren't what he's produced.
Right. So, I mean, Andrew Ladd is a bit of a bargain for the Jets right now. So, you know, if you're Blake Wheeler, you don't want to make that, you know, you probably don't want to make that same mistake from Blake Wheeler's perspective. Mm-hmm. And you said, you know, if he went five and you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, do you maybe swallow it and take, you say, okay, I'll do five? $5 million a year?
$250,000 a year, the discrepancy. I mean, the Jets can afford it if they want to do it. So, it's. I mean, at the end of the day, do I think that's what should hold strong on? Probably not, but I wouldn't be shocked. Cheveldayoff paid a little bit, extra to Kane and a little extra to Enstrom. So,
when this contract ends, or when this negotiation ends, is Blake Wheeler getting paid more money than Andrew Ladd?
Oh, yeah, 100%. No question about it.
I think so, but I do think it's tough to argue with Richie's number. I mean, just under $5 million. That seems about right for a guy that, as we said, his numbers show that he's a top 10 right winger. So it's tough to not pay him that. But to say that he's, again, you know, a $6 million, $7 million player, I think is a little bit ridiculous. So I think Richie, again, is bang on.
So you have it at your final number is 4 years, $4.75 million?
And $19 million
over 4 years.
It's a nice deal for both sides, I think.
It's going to be fun, and hopefully, I can't see if we're tweeting it right now, but hopefully Remus can tweet out all three of these, because it's going to be interesting to see how close Richie is, because he's been very close in the past. And I think that he's going to be close here, too. And we're going to find out in the coming weeks.
Well, he might get the title of Karnak over you after your earlier performance as Karnak with the Brian Bickle contract.
I'm Kerouac.
Or Brian Bickle goals, rather.
Kerouac. Jack Kerouac.
Really? That's what you're going with?
I don't know. It's closer than Karnak.
Alrighty. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to focus our attention on the upcoming NHL draft. We're going to be joined by a Western Hockey League scout. Dave Faulkner is a scout for the Regina Pats. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Down 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Follow us on Twitter, send us your comments at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of our ongoing segments where we are previewing the NHL draft. We'll be live in New Jersey for the draft at the end of the month. We welcome to the program Dave Faulkner. He's a scout for the Regina Pats of the Western Hockey League. Dave, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, guys. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. How about yourself, Dave?
Very well. Taking advantage of a nice day down here and hoping it doesn't snow.
Always something you got to hope for early in June in Canada. You never know when it's going to come. Dave, we're looking at the draft and we're previewing the draft ahead of the event in New Jersey at the end of this month. And you look at the Western Hockey League. In last year's NHL draft, 5 of the first 10 picks in the draft came out of the W. In terms of talent this year, how does the WHL measure up to last year's crop?
Well, I don't think they're is that deep this year. They won't have the top 5 guys again. They will have. There's a lot of great young hockey players in the Western Canada Hockey League. Well, it's not called that anymore, but the Western Hockey League. But throughout the OHL, and the Quebec League, they've got some top talent there. I think, you know, that Memorial Cup really showed exactly those top players that are going to be, you know, picked 1, 2, 3.
David, Seth Jones is going to be one of those 1, 2, 3, likely number one, playing in Portland in the WHL. Who does he remind you of, and what do you think his ceiling is?
Oh, I think he'll be a top player. He's, you know, he's from the Colorado area. Well, he's born in Texas, but he's from the Colorado area. So I think there's a little bit of, possible homegrown stuff going on there that they will pick him. I mean, Patrick Waugh, it was funny the other day when he got in there and he said, you know, maybe we should trade them. And I don't think that's a good idea, but yeah, he reminds me, he's such a mobile player, and he's such a big kid. I mean, he's a cross between a Larry Robinson and like he's so smart out there too, a Dennis Potvin. He's just he's just got so many tools, and he's so equipped.
Dave, we want to ask you about another defenseman who's from nearby Grandview, Manitoba, played for the Brandon Wheat Kings, Ryan Pulock. He's fluctuated in terms of draft ranking. He was in the top 10, and then he's even fallen out of the top 20 on some boards. But do you think he's one of those guys that has a kind of a boom-bust potential as a defenseman? What have you seen out of him?
Well, I think he's a potential. I would take him in the top 20 myself. I would be, if I was working with a club, I would be, I definitely, he'd be on my radar. I think potentially he's got a lot of upside. He's got NHL written all over him. You know, it's sometimes tough when you're in your draft year. You know, you sometimes push a little bit harder than you should. You want to look good. You're showcasing yourself, and it's just sometimes that's the wrong thing to do. You just got to go out there, play your game, be comfortable. And I think he ran into that a little bit this year in a few games.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Dave Faulkner. He's a scout in the Western Hockey League for the Regina Pats. Dave, another guy coming out of the Western Hockey League, moving up front. He's a forward. He came out of, played in Medicine Hat, is Hunter Shinkarik. The Jets, you know, being here in Winnipeg, it's obviously who we're focused on, pick sort of in that 12-13 range, and that's a guy who's been talked about as still being there. Do you expect him to be around there in the early teens, or do you see him going higher in the draft?
Absolutely. He's got what it takes. He will definitely be right there, right where he's where everybody's scheduling to be. I would love to see him, you know, end up on the Jets. That would be a, you know, with the kid from Michigan that they got last year and Shinkarik, man, they would be building their stock for the future. And what? I do want to mention that I'm no longer with the Pats. I'm with PA Raiders now.
Oh, I apologize.
That's all right. I played for the Pats and was with them for quite a few years, but I moved over with Dale Durkach when he went.
Okay, so, David, that's a nice segue for us, because the next player we were going to ask you about is defenseman Josh Morrissey, and we had Craig Button on last week of TSN. He compared Morrissey to Gary Suter when he was coming through the system with Calgary. Can you talk about Morrissey and his skill level and what you expect for him in the future?
Oh, I agree. I agree with Mr. Button. That is right on the nose. I like that comparison. And Josh has so much upside. His skating ability, his handling the puck. He's a player that you depend on the power play. He's his first pass coming out of the zone is excellent. He's just a rounded player that we're very excited to have him. And during that draft a couple years ago, with the Bantam draft, when we didn't think we were going to get him, and when we got him, we were so happy. And he's done everything for us. He will be our captain next year, and he is a great leader.
Dave, another guy we want to ask for you, we'll go back to the Regina Pats, Morgan Klimchuk. He's ranked in the bottom of the first round. But what can you tell us about him? What are his strengths, and maybe what's his ceiling as a professional hockey player?
Well, Morgan's a great player. I mean, he's deserving of going in the first round. He's a well-balanced, well-rounded player. He's got decent size. He's got strength on the puck. You know, in around the net, he's willing to go to the front of the net. It just seems like he's already playing that model of what NHL wants their players to grow into. And I think Morgan might even come up a little bit. I think a lot of people is in the under 18 tournament. I think his stock went up quite a bit.
Another guy we want to ask you about, he's kind of become the forgotten guy in Portland with Ty Ratty and Brendan Leipzig, guys that were drafted last year. But Nick Batan is a guy who played really well for Portland in the Memorial Cup. What can you tell us about him? Aside from seeing him in the Memorial Cup, I haven't seen him play that much, but he's been a mainstay on that line with Ty Ratty and Brendan Leipzig.
Yeah, he is. Nick is. I think the only thing that is going against him right now is the size issue. And is there a smarter guy out there when he gets the puck? He just makes things happen out of nothing. He really is a creative player. He's got great vision of the ice. I mean, he's a kid that I think is a shoo-in to play in the NHL.
Dave, much has been made for the Jets about their depth in terms of draft picks. They have, I think, six picks in the first three rounds. Are there any players, and we're putting you on the spot here a bit, so we apologize, are there any players in the WHL draft eligible, maybe second, third rounder guys that people should keep an eye on because they could surprise in the future?
Oh, man. I would think there's a lot of guys off the top of my head. The one kid that is on our team that isn't eligible, he would definitely be a first rounder is Leon Draisaitl, the German boy. But I just think there's so many kids. I just off the top of my head.
We put you on the spot. We apologize.
Yeah. No problem.
Dave Faulkner, your scout for the Prince Albert Raiders, I'll get that right, of the WHL. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Take care, Dave. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
You know, the scout, the draft coming up at the end of June, it's going to be an interesting in that it's all happening that one day. That's Sunday, June the 30th. You'll be able to hear it, catch it live here on TSN 1290. You boys are going to be down there at the Prudential Center in New Jersey.
Yep.
You'll be there with Hustler and Lawless. I'll be back here in Winnipeg. Jay Richardson will be down at the Shark Club. I believe we're both going to be there, for the event. Really looking forward to the draft this year.
It should be interesting. We've had Craig Button on. We had Craig Button on last week. We've had him on throughout the year. We had Dave Faulkner on there, Prince Albert Raiders WHL scout. Next week, we're going to look to speak to somebody from the OHL. And the following week, we're going to look to speak to somebody from the QMJHL and the NCAA. We're going to try and cover all our bases here because people need to be aware of the players being drafted. And as opposed to just going in and saying, oh, I heard this guy is good or not good, we're talking to a number of people. You're going to get different opinions. You're going to have your consensus board. We're going to go over every player because the Jets, as we mentioned, have top picks, have a lot of picks in the first three rounds. What do they do with those picks? Do they use them all? Do they trade some? We want to make sure that when there's players drafted, you know who they are. Or if you don't, we have the clips ready of people who do know who they are, and they can describe how good their game is.
Well said. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll break down the recommendations from the NHL's competition committee meeting that occurred earlier this week in Toronto. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Drew's doing... Are you stretching or doing yoga? What is
stretching.
That?
Stretching.
No. Yeah. Do you do yoga, Drew?
I don't. I should. I have very poor flexibility.
There's other ways to get, you know, you can do gymnastics.
Yeah, I don't do gymnastics either.
Drew, my grandfather's over 80 and told me last week that he's going to start doing yoga. Which is funny because you're 2 years older than him and you don't do yoga.
There you go. I got to tell you, Remus's joke was way better than that one.
Do you guys remember?
Remus has an hour and a half to think about it while he's snapping in bed during the show.
Do you guys remember, like, before, like, back when it was still Sports Radio 1290, someone called in and asked... Maybe that was even when we were on Red River Radio and someone called in and goes, how old is Drew actually?
That was actually your dad, I think, who called in to say that.
No, my dad knows how old you are.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Dave Faulkner, Prince Albert Raiders scout, for joining us to talk about some of the WHL prospects.
Remember who played for Prince Albert Raiders? Dave Manson. I believe he's still, he's from Prince Albert.
Didn't Medano play for them too? Drew, I guess you don't want to pat yourself on the back for making that mistake during the interview, eh?
No. Not really. I'm only getting the information as he's feeding me the information.
Well, no, I mean, he as he mentioned, he played for the Regina Pats.
Yeah.
And he was scouting for the Regina Pats, but he's moved over to Prince Albert. I mean, it's just down the street.
It's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have no idea if it's down the street or not, do you?
I think I'll get Remus to maybe message you there. I think Manson is still working with Prince Albert. What does he say? What did he say?
He hasn't said anything.
Oh,
he's sleeping.
Because we had Manson on, but yeah.
That was a while back.
I'm positive he played for Prince Albert.
Anyways, let's talk about some of the recommendations from the competition committee that met earlier this week in Toronto. The competition committee operated under a much different environment this year than they had in past years. It's amazing what happens when there's no lockout or CBA negotiation dangling over everyone's head. So much more can get done in that kind of setting. But they came out with a number of different recommendations, the first one being, the one that got the most attention, that visors are now going to be mandatory for any players who have played less than 26 games in the NHL. Pretty much that means any rookies are going to have to wear visors from here on out, or they recommend all these recommendations have to be approved by both the NHL Board of Governors and the NHLPA Executive Committee. Do you see any chance that visors aren't going to become the thing of in the NHL from now on?
No, it makes sense. Grandfathered in, similar to helmets. You remember Jets fans remember like Randy Carlyle and Craig McTavish, those guys not wearing helmets because it was grandfathered in and it was their choice.
Right. And Drew's already a grandfather, so he's obviously supportive of that. But you know what? Someone made a funny comment on Twitter, though. Yeah. Who's going to be the last? Who's going to be the Craig McTavish with the visors, right?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to be the last guy?
Because there's going to be some
guys. Who's going to be the last guy not wearing a visor is what I'm saying.
Pretty much anybody who's played, anybody who finished, who played their rookie year this year.
It'll still be 20 years from now, probably, that guys won't be wearing visors because there's going to be a guy who's come in, played one season as a rookie, hasn't worn a visor, and won't wear for the rest of his career.
But there's not really even that many players nowadays who
25%.
Work. Yeah. So, I mean, I wonder how many of those 25% were really the young guys, though. Because they're all used to wearing visors. I mean, if they played in NCAA, they have to wear a full cage. Mm-hmm. And if they played in junior, they had to wear a visor. So it's not that many guys. I mean, the guys who are not wearing visors now aren't, have, for the most part, as long as they're relatively recent to in the NHL, have taken off the visor that they wore all throughout their junior career.
A guy like Jimmy Benn doesn't wear a visor when he's 23. How old is he? He'll be in the league for at least probably another 15 years.
Well, there you go. There's a candidate right there.
And you have to think.
15 years when we're talking about Jimmy Benn's lack of visor as the, the last guy, then.
No, but you have to think as well that a lot of NHLers will choose to wear a visor because now more guys are wearing visors. The number keeps going up and up. But I think this year, something that was really, that was a game changer for me was all three Staal brothers. Well, the two that were playing in the NHL this year, Jared Staal, it doesn't count. I don't think I don't know if he wore a visor, but remember when the Staal's mom kind of said, guys, to Eric and Jordan, she said, you guys are wearing visors because of what happened to Mark Staal.
Because your brother almost lost an eye.
Right, and they put on the visors because, if you remember, Eric Staal and Jordan Staal never wore visors. Those guys are, I mean, Eric Staal has been in the league since 03, is it? 03 or 04. So he's a little bit older, but Jordan Stahl's younger. Now, guys like that are wearing visors, kind of guys that have an edge to their game, and I think that's a game changer. More guys are going to start wearing their visors, and this is a no-brainer because we were talking about this 5 years ago. And so now Matthew Schneider and Donald Fehr in the NHLPA, haven't heard that name in a while, have you, Donald Fehr?
I'm okay now.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody can rest easy. It's time for those guys to just hammer out the details and grandfather it in.
Dave Manson is the assistant coach of the Prince Albert Raiders.
Yeah, and he's from Prince Albert. Thanks to Remus for looking that up.
Hybrid icing will be given a trial run in the 2013-14 exhibition season. They tried it in the AHL and they didn't approve it. I don't think they're going to approve it in the NHL.
There's a huge problem here, Richie, with this hybrid icing. Don Cherry brought it up on CBC. He's brought it up many times before. If you're in a puck battle, but two guys, a forward and a defenseman, are skating and they get to the faceoff circle and they're neck and neck, You know, that's when the hybrid icing rule comes into play. I mean, you got to go no touch. You got to go touch or no touch. This hybrid thing, you just said it, Drew. Didn't work out in the AHL. Why is it going to be any different? A lot of these guys that play in the AHL end up going to the NHL. It's not like this is a completely different planet these guys are living on, right? Or a different league they're playing in. Well, it's obviously a different league, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, this is...
There's got to be a way to prevent the injuries that you see in icing situations. I mean, I don't know why this doesn't work. Just make the race to the bottom of the faceoff circle.
The problem isn't how close is it, who has the edge, and how do you call it?
You know what? You figure it out so you don't break an ankle. Your guy doesn't shatter his femur. You figure it out.
I think, you know what I said?
How many more guys have to get injured before they, you know, well, maybe this one faceoff isn't the most crucial faceoff in game 43 of an 82-game season.
Yeah, but I mean...
I know.
Drew, you know what I said at the time, earlier this week? This is going to be the new skate in the crease. When you leave it up to the ref's discretion, you don't want to leave this stuff up to the ref's discretion, whether he blows it dead or, I mean.
What about on a pending icing? A pending icing, you can't contact the other player until after the puck is touched. What about that?
There's got to be some sort of way to get around it.
On a chase for an icing, you can't touch the other player until the puck's touched.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be a way to do it.
What about that? I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea.
I don't think that's a bad idea either. Makes sense to me.
You know what happened yesterday? If you guys were watching the first period of the Pittsburgh-Boston game, early in the game, Milan Lucic got a boarding penalty early in the game. And I forget who it was. It might have been Matt Niskanen. I don't know if we can look that up. It was a Penguins defenseman, went back for the puck. And what happened is Lucic made contact with him after he had already touched the puck, and the problem was that they didn't see that it was a delayed icing call. So Lucic ended up getting a boarding penalty. I thought it was a bad call, but I mean, you're having problems even with that. Where maybe it was Douglas Murray, actually, now that I think about it, but they don't see that it's a delayed icing, right?
Sure.
So that's dangerous because I didn't think it was boarding. I think they gave him the penalty just because there was contact. If anything, it was, interference or roughing. But when you have a situation where two guys are racing for the puck, is it a good thing to have guys not clear if they should continue skating or not? I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
well, usually the linesman is yelling or the goalie is yelling. That's a rare situation that the players go for something and one of them doesn't know that it's icing or thinks the icing has been waved off. Usually there's enough communication on the ice that... That situation doesn't happen.
It's like you said, though. What they're trying to do is eliminate penalties on icings because icings are not worth, you know, breaking your neck, breaking your back, injuring your knee. All those injuries that we've seen where guys' feet come from beneath them and they go head first or feet first into the boards. That's what you're trying to reduce.
I don't disagree that it's an issue. I think there's actually bigger issues injury-wise than the icing rule. Everybody hits from behind these days.
Yeah,
they all do. The players are coached now to put themselves in position to be hit from behind, to draw a penalty and protect the puck, which is not how people were taught to play 20 years ago.
No.
I think that there are headhunting issues. I think there's a bunch of other issues. And they talk about the terrible injuries that happen once or twice a year from icing. What about all the other injuries that happen for everything
50
else?
Times a year.
Yeah, I think
you're right, Richie.
Too much emphasis on this and not enough emphasis on some of the other more important injuries.
Well... The next recommendation from the competition committee was that the nets should be made 4 inches shallower, which would give more room behind the net. Now, this one sort of came out of left field. Nobody even knew this one was up for discussion.
Makes sense because you are not moving the net up like you did back in the day and end of the 90s and leave a bunch of room behind the net. You're just leaving more room behind the net but not taking any room away from the front of the net. And do you need that deep of a goal? No. So, yeah, sounds like a good idea to me.
I like this one. I didn't see... I mean, exactly. You're not changing the fundamental dimensions of the game significantly. You're just making sure that the net... There's really no need for the net to be that deep at all. I mean, it's dead space on the ice, really. You know, why does it have to be that deep?
So the way the players collapse to the post, like the defensemen both collapse. The Bruins do this really well. They collapse to both posts. You don't really see much action back there anyways anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Gretzky's setting up camp behind the net anymore.
Right.
But, I mean, I thought this one was a good one in that, I mean, they're always looking for ways to artificially boost scoring.
Yeah.
I think this will do it, but it won't result in a...
It's not as artificial, yeah.
It's not as artificial as, you know, when they change the penalty rules so it's just an endless parade to the box like it was after the last lockout with the obstruction rules that have fortunately lessened up a little bit.
Yeah, thankfully.
You know, Drew, we're talking about these rules, and I still think it kind of relates to what Richie's saying. I mean, we've had Bobby Holik on, former New Jersey Devil, multiple cup winner, and he said, what did he say? Do you guys remember? He said that they should make, in the NHL, they should have the ice the same size as the international ice. And I think that reduces injuries a lot more for a number of reasons. You have, then that's more conducive to no-touch icing. And to me, that is something that these guys should be considering.
I don't think you can do that, and I'll tell you why I don't think you can do that. These teams have been building their rosters around this playing surface, a playing surface of whatever the dimensions of the ice surface is. If all of a sudden they randomly decide that this next year everything's going to be a different surface, it changes the fundamental, that changes how each team plays too drastically.
It's not a physical game, and there's too much money at stake with those seats, and et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think that's the problem. I mean, I really don't think that the international ice surface is the problem.
I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad idea to make it bigger. I just don't think that the teams are ever going to do it.
And I think they should consider it.
Well, I think they've made it bigger by decreasing the depth of the net. I think that makes the ice surface to me is the area that's playable. Right now, by changing the dimensions of the net, or at least the depth of the net, not the actual size of the goal, they've added 4 inches of room behind the net.
Not bad.
To me, I'm okay with that one.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It's fine.
Other rule changes that they've made, and this one I don't really get. All 4-minute high sticking penalties will be subject to video review. Is that the first straw in a slippery slope to seeing a coach's challenge?
Yeah, because they're worried that it's another stick or something like that. Again, putting delays in games for unnecessary reasons. Use the rest discretion. Just move on with the game. You don't think you need to go to the replay to see whose stick it was. Once in a while, there'll be somebody else's errant stick. And once in a while, they have a bunch of other bad calls that they're not going to go up to review. So whatever.
Yeah, like why review one but not the other? I mean, and what happens if a ref determines a guy is it's actually a 5-minute major and he gets that wrong? But that's not reviewable?
Yes. Enough with the video review.
I don't like the coach's challenge idea.
That's a stupid idea, too.
I mean, not for hockey.
Well, I mean, there is a human nature element to officiating a hockey game.
Some guys are going to make mistakes,
but it's not like baseball where it's like you're safe or you're out, or it's a homer or it's a foul. Those are crystal clear, and the guy's usually not right there if it's a homer foul. So I get reviewing that because that's clear.
Homer foul is the same as reviewing a goal.
Right, exactly. Nobody's saying get rid of goalie review, but you can't slow the game down to review. Well, did the stick crawl up the opponent's stick, and did he get caught by the other stick? I mean, if a mistake happens,
so be it.
I mean, we're not robots. Nobody's expecting them to be robots. I think there's a lot of complaining about the officiating that is to some degree unfair to the refs because the game is just that fast that sometimes you might miss one.
Right, and you know, Stephen Waka makes the bad call, in the Hawks Red Wings series. But, I mean, you move on.
And he doesn't know that it's going to result in a goal right after. He didn't call it. He didn't go back and after the goal was in say it was a penalty. He called it before. He just couldn't hear the whistle.
Final rule that they changed is Rule 81-5 is recommended to be eliminated. In that rule allowed linesmen to wave off icing on attainable passes.
Yeah, but that one, I just don't know. They don't even follow that. Well, once in a while, they call it, but it's just odd. So they're getting rid of that rule?
They're going to get rid of that rule. They're going to remove it so that it's now just an icing, and the linesman don't have the... I don't get that one.
It doesn't really make sense because attainable passes, and then they talk about the defenseman being able to get the puck. Like, there's still some discretion there.
Well, but what's an attainable pass versus a not... I mean, if it's attainable, why didn't you get it?
Well...
if it's attainable, by definition, isn't it a pass that...
Fair enough.
Should get waved off because the recipient of the pass is unless he's tripped over his feet and why hasn't he received the pass?
Fair point, Drew.
I don't get it. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to focus our attention on the New York Rangers head coach situation. John Tortorella was fired. Andrew Gross of the Record newspaper in New Jersey is going to talk to us about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollack and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Record newspaper in New Jersey, covers the New York Rangers, Andrew Gross. Andrew, good afternoon. How are you?
Afternoon, guys. How's it going today?
Doing very well, thank you, Andrew. Andrew, we got to start, obviously, with the dismissal of John Tortorella as head coach of the New York Rangers. You know, to your mind, what was the downfall of Tortorella?
I think the downfall is when you have a coach like that who is, you know, and when I say a coach like that, you know, a guy who's kind of in your grill all the time and constantly on your mistakes, you need to see success. And I think the players just got tired of the message. I don't think there's any easier way of saying that. And, you know, I mean, maybe I'm old school about it. I hate to see a place where, you know, the players can rebel against a coach like that. But I certainly think that's what happened there, that they made it known to Glenn Sather that, you know, they were tired of Tortorella's act.
Andrew, you mentioned Glenn Sather. What was the relationship between Glenn Sather and John Tortorella?
Well, I will say, I mean, and obviously I was never in the meeting rooms with them, but they are two completely diametrically opposite type personalities. And I always got the sense that Glenn was somewhat amused by how tight Tortorella was all the time. I mean, I remember chatting once, and then Glenn was sort of, you know, just amazed that Tortorella could yell as much as he did. But, you know, Glenn then kind of said, well, you know what? The funny thing is, those are the guys who don't have high blood pressure because they let everything out. And, you know, he was sort of saying it as a joke. But, you know what? It's not the type of personality that Glenn is. Glenn is, you know, just as a human being, he's got a lot bigger sense of humor, and he takes, you know, he can see the funny side in things a little bit. And, you know, I don't think those are two guys that, you know, if it wasn't for a GM coach relationship, would be two guys you would put at, you know, say a wedding table together.
Andrew, we've read and heard that the player exit interviews had a lot to do with the decision by Glenn Sather to fire John Tortorella. How significant were some of the complaints by the players and King Henrik in particular?
Well, I think what happened, and I guess, you know, knowing a little bit about Glenn's personality, sort of like we talked to, I don't get the sense that he would have, and I guess the word is embarrassed John by having him stand up. You know, he was the only Rangers official to talk on breakup day. Glenn didn't do any press that day. I don't think Glenn would have had Torts, you know, have to meet the media and have to do all those exit interviews if Glenn really had an inclination that he was going to be letting Torts go. So, you know, something happened between, you know, losing Game 5 to the Bruins and on Monday's breakup day getting to Wednesday. And like you said, I think, you know, what he was hearing from the players was a very strong part of that. And certainly, you know what, what Henrik said to the press, which really, you know, he didn't commit to the Rangers past next season, basically. I think that was very key because, I mean, Glenn made a very strong point in his teleconference to announce that Torts was being dismissed. He made it very clear that the Rangers' intention is to sign Henrik to a long-term contract. So, you know, it's funny. In at the trade deadline, I got the real sense that the Rangers had picked John Tortorella over Marion Gabrick when they made that trade. And now, you know, I think Glenn sort of felt, and this is kind of simplifying things, but, you know, if Glenn felt he had to make a choice between Lundqvist and Tortorella, he was going to side with the player in that case.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers. Now, it would be great for the tabloids, and it would be great for, you know, just the buzz it would create. But how seriously is Glenn Sather considering the supposed interest of Mark Messier and Wayne Gretzky in the Rangers head coaching position?
Well, I will say getting information out of the Rangers is sort of like trying to stick a microphone into that room when all the Cardinals are trying to elect a new pope. So, you know, I don't know. You know, here's my take on it, is that, you know, if Messier really has signaled the fact that he wants to be coach, I think Glenn is going to be really torn. And, you know, and I spoke to Bobby Holik about this, and obviously Bobby has the perspective of having worked for Glenn Sather. He, you know, Bobby's point on this was that, you know, he really does feel like Glenn's going to be backed into a corner of feeling like, you know, he's going to have to hire Mess. And I don't know necessarily that it's the right hire at this time, but at the same time, you know what? I mean, Mess really has no background, so you can't, you know, say whether it's the right or the wrong move, other than it would be a big gamble there. But you know what? If Mess has gone to Glenn and said, you know what, I'm ready, this is what I want to do, please consider me, I think Glenn will, at the very least, consider Messier pretty strongly.
What about Gretz?
I don't see that happening. I think Gretzky came out himself and told TSN, as far as I know, that you know, he didn't see himself being involved in that job. I've sort of heard, you know, from the perimeter that, you know, he either knows that he's not going to get the job, or I don't think he's savvy enough not to put himself in the position that he's going to compete against Messier for a job. So I think even if he did ever have some real interest in that job, he stepped back from that now, and I don't see Wayne Gretzky getting that job.
From a Rangers perspective, even, I mean, in the 96-97 season when Messier left town, there was always a little bit of talk that Messier was upset Gretzky didn't push enough for him to re-sign with the team, so probably want to walk on eggshells there. Andrew, in terms of coaching candidates, and if it's not Messier, seasoned veterans, we hear Alain Vigneault. There's talk that if Dan Bylsma is released and say they would have interest in him, you hear the name Lindy Ruff. On the other hand, you hear the name Dallas Eakins. If it's not Mess, do you see the team going for more of the seasoned veteran coach or the young up-and-comer?
That's a really good question. And you know what? I would think, it's off the top of my head, I think Dallas Eakins is a very, very, very intriguing candidate. And you know what? Everything I've heard about him is he is going to make a very good NHL coach. I get the sense, though, that Glenn would kind of want a little bit of a track record there if he's not going for Mess. And you know what? I think another name you got to throw out there, I think if Dave Tippett, you know, if it gets to the point where Glenn, because Glenn has pursued or been interested in Dave before, And Glenn certainly has a strong relationship with Don Maloney, his former assistant GM. I'm sure Glenn has heard nothing but great things about Dave Tippett. So I think if Dave gets to the open market, that's a very, very strong possibility there.
Andrew, there's been a lot of talk about the New York Rangers possibly using their amnesty buyout for Brad Richards. And do you think that's a realistic possibility? And a second part of that question, how much will the new coaching hire impact that decision to possibly use that amnesty buyout on Brad Richards?
You know, it's a really interesting thing because, you know, at the beginning of the season when Brad was struggling and not doing well, I mean, it started almost right away. And you know what? I think Brad could have had the best season, and I think the Rangers would have had to consider this given the way the CBA is structured and the length of Brad's contract and how old he's going to be at the end of this contract. So I think it would have been a discussion regardless of how Brad played this year. The fact that Brad struggled so much sort of turned this into, well, you know, instead of giving him through next season, we might have to consider this summer. Oddly enough, given how strong the bond is or was between Tortorella and Brad, you know, going back to their Tampa Bay days, I think having Tortorella out of here and bringing in a new coach actually gives Brad a better shot of coming back for next season at this point. Although, you know, if you just look at the money breakdown and how many players the Rangers are going to have to re-sign,
right,
you know, you're looking at Lundqvist after next season. You're looking at Ryan Callahan after next season. I think Dan Girardi is up soon. You know, and then you got the RFAs this summer and Ryan McDonough, who, you know, I know Glenn likes, you know, kind of holding the line on these, you know, quote-unquote bridge contracts after the entry-level deal. But, you know, Ryan McDonough is a number one defenseman, and, you know, you're going to have to pay him, I think, like a number one defenseman at some point. And he may be the rare RFA who does, you know, attract an offer sheet from another team. And I don't think Glenn wants to be backed into a corner like that. So you got to spend on Ryan. And then Derek Stepan is out there, and, you know, O'Reilly's contract that, you know, where he got an offer sheet and went back to the Avalanche, what was that, 2 years, $5 million each, so a two-year, $10 million deal. That, you know, as much as the Rangers don't want to hear that, that might have set a bar because Derek Stepan is that kind of player.
That's exactly right. You know, we talked, final question here for you, Andrew. We talked about the competition committee and the talk of visors being mandated for players who have played less than, I think, 26 games in the NHL. That brings us to Mark Stahl. Can you give us an update at all on how he's doing, how his vision is? And there was some talk he might not be able to see as he once did. What are the Rangers, what's the news on that front?
Well, I mean, the last update we got was at breakup day, and it was straight out of Mark's mouth. He was the one who, you know, and he's been hinting all along, and also when we spoke to both Eric and Jordan Stahl, when, you know, whenever we visited Carolina or the Hurricanes came up, they were also hinting the same thing, that Mark's vision is not going to be at 100% like it was before being struck right by the right eye. And I'm talking about right eye vision. His left eye, if anything, is growing stronger, trying to compensate for the right eye. But Mark's the one who pretty much came out on breakup day and said, yeah, you know, I don't think this right eye is going to go back to 100%. And the next sentence after that, and the sentence that was not as widely reported as the first sentence, was that Mark said, and I don't see that being an issue. I expect to be back playing at the same level I was, and I don't expect to be answering questions about my right eye for the rest of my career. So, if anything, he is very, very confident about that. That said, you know, he only played one game after March 5th, and he took himself right back out of the lineup. He was dizzy. You know, he had trouble adjusting. And so, you know, he has to prove that we're not – he has to show us we don't ask those questions anymore. So as far as an update, you know, it's going to be one of these summers, I think, where the Rangers really have to hold their breath and hope that Mark is correct, that, you know, he's going to be able to adapt to his, you know, basically his new life with this eye.
Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. As always, some great insight into the New York Rangers situation. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, Andrew.
Guys, anytime. Have a great day.
You too, Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, the Dallas Stars have signed Sergei Gonchar. He's 39 years old. You'll never guess what he signed for. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Primo, this isn't Bruce. This is Neil Young. Still good.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Andrew Gross for having just joined us. In case you missed it, the interview will be available for download on illegalcurve.com. We'll also throw it up on tsn1290.ca. And, of course, you can subscribe to the show weekly on iTunes and get it sent to you automatically.
So you're telling me Remus shows up an hour and 10 minutes late,
mm-hmm.
and then he doesn't play Richie's Bruce for the last segment.
Yeah. That's suspension time right there.
Yeah,
is that
my shut up, you guys?
One show.
Is Remus allowed to talk to us like that?
One show and a fine of 3 coffees.
I just got here. I didn't have time to queue it up. Relax.
I think Remus is a little.
A little grumpy.
Yeah, you're very ornery the past couple of days.
There we go. Okay, you've redeemed yourself. Thank you. Anyways, the Dallas Stars, this is a new one. Dallas Stars yesterday acquired Sergei Gonchar from the Ottawa Senators for a conditional 6th-round pick.
Before this segment was Radio Nowhere.
Now, the reason they acquired him from the Ottawa Senators is that he was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent on July 5th.
Yep, and he was negotiating with the KHL.
And he had been in talks with the KHL to go back to Russia, finish his career there. The Ottawa Senators had no intention of re-signing him. They have a lot of young...
Yeah, they've got young guys. Patrick Wiercock, who kind of had a really nice productive season.
Andre Benoit, Jared Cowan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Guys, you know, Cowan's coming back. And you have young guys who can provide some offense, and you have Carlson to rely on. So I think that was the reason. I don't think it was Gonchar's play. Gonchar had a good year.
Yeah, no, he was a fine player, but, you know, they had younger talent who was ready to step up and change the role, change the, you know, the dimensions of the Senators' defense.
As a complete aside, Pittsburgh never signed him to the deal. Remember, Pittsburgh offered him 2 years. This is years back after the Cup. Pittsburgh offered him 2 years, and Ottawa offered him three, and Pittsburgh wouldn't budge. And you have to wonder, if Pittsburgh had budged, I mean, obviously the cap situation changes, but if Pittsburgh had budged, that would have been a nice addition. They wouldn't have had to splurge for Paul Martin. And, you know, hindsight 2020, Gonchar ended up playing those 3 years and is going to play two more, apparently. So I bet you Ray Shear, that's one of the moves he would have said, I probably want that one back.
Anyways, the Senators weren't going to re-sign him, so they traded his rights to Dallas for a conditional sixth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
The condition being, if Dallas signs him, the Senators get a sixth-round pick from the Stars. If they don't sign him, no compensation whatsoever. It just allows the Stars to negotiate with Gonchar ahead of the start of free agency. The Stars signed him. He's 39 years old. 2 years, $10 million. In your mind, was Sergei Gonchar a $5 million a year player last year? Never mind next year when he's going to be 40?
Probably not. And for Jim Nill, this is his first move as the new Dallas Stars GM. First big signing, if you want to call it that. And, you know, I can see what he's thinking. You know, you need some offense on your D. You've got Goligoski there, who's one of your top offensive defensemen, with Robidoux. Brendan Dillon emerged. I know Richie really likes Brendan Dillon. He's a young defenseman there. And you've got Jordy Benn and Trevor Daley. I don't know if giving him that much money, though, is what you want to do with this defense. And, you know, Dallas hung in there long enough in the playoff race. They obviously didn't make the playoffs, but they hung in there. And it wasn't, you know, I don't know if Sergei Gonchar necessarily makes them that much better. When you're paying a guy $5 million a year, you'd hope that the guy's going to make you quite a bit better.
And I think you take a step back and look at it from the big picture. I think the first thing is Dallas doesn't have a lot of money on the books. So this $5 million contract puts them up to $51 million next year when the cap's 64, and they already have basically their defense and goaltending set.
Right.
And a fair amount of forwards signed. So I think first off, they need to spend some money. I think that's a factor for sure. I think the second thing is, you know, they have young guys like Brendan Dillon, we've talked about on the show, like Jamie Oleksiak. They want to bring them around slowly. And I think one of the things Jim Nill learned in Detroit is you don't want to rush the player through the system.
Right.
So Oleksiak and guys like that, you know, first-round picks, they want to slow them down and say, okay. Then the next thing you want to do is get the puck up to your forwards. And they have some guys who can do this, but Gonchar can do this as well as anybody. So the puck gets up to the forwards succeed. And you have a guy who can quarterback the power play. Goligoski hasn't turned into that guy. Robidoux is a second second power play guy in reality, not a first power play guy. So you've addressed your power play need. You've addressed the puck up to your defenseman, your forwards need. You've addressed having money on the books, but not for long term, only for 2 years. He's not a great skater anymore. It takes him a little to get around the ice. He's not very physical. He makes a great first pass. He makes a nice neutral zone regroup pass. He's got a good shot. He sees the ice exceptionally well. And look at what Jim Nill came from. He came from an organization that built itself upon defensemen moving the puck. I think this is him bringing that over. I want defensemen who can move the puck. We've had trouble getting it out of our own zone. This will bridge it over for some of the younger guys to get going. He is a professional. And I actually don't mind the deal. If it's 5 years for, you know, if it's five mil for 3-4 years, different story. But I don't mind the deal.
Even at 2 years, I mean, usually, you know, when you got a guy who's 39 years old, he's signing 1 year contracts for the most part.
Most part.
And if you're going to offer him a 2 year contract, let's say, you would expect if you're going to offer him a 2 year contract, there's going to be a discount involved.
I did an article on this, but I guess it was a year ago, but now a year and a half ago. Unless the CBA has changed, there's actually a benefit in this, Drew, also, in that if Gonchar does retire after year one, the Stars have the money on the books of $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay $5 million.
Like they don't actually pay him,
and
right?
It's still on the books, I believe, if that's going to stay the same.
So,
meaning
like
they're
fake money?
Yeah, arbitrarily up again. I don't know if that's going to change or not.
Like to get over the floor, are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean,
well, that's what I mean. The Islanders did that, I mean, in sort of acquiring Tim Thomas. Isn't that one of the reasons they acquired Tim Thomas there?
Well, he was on a suspended list. I think it works in a similar way. I'm not sure exactly how that was working. I have to check into that. But that's a possibility. It was kind of like Brodeur retired this year. Devils would have had the money on the books, but not actually paid it out. And they had money issues.
I think there's some...
But I think that's not the purpose here. I think the purpose is to get puck moving out of their own zone. And you look at this team, Drew. I mean, Daly, these guys are nice players, but in reality, I mean, you want to have a premier puck mover and a premier power play quarterback. And I think he helps you in that regard. And it's not too long term of a deal. I don't mind it. I think Jim Nell's very capable. I think it's fine.
Okay. You're entitled. I mean, it just seems to me that the 2 years, $5 million a year is a little much. Something remarkable. I mean, Sergei Gonchar, 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
in the last 8 years, he has not played a season for less than $5 million a year, and he was 31 years old eight years ago.
You're definitely improving your back end when you acquire Sergei Gonchar. Like Richie said, they definitely can use his veteran presence, his puck-moving ability. And I guess you have to say hats off to him at 39 years old, getting $5 million a year for the next 2 years, right?
Sure. I mean, 40 years ago, if somebody would have offered me $5 million a year when I was 39 years old, I would have really taken
age
it.
Age jokes don't work if you use them on yourself.
I can't use the age jokes on myself.
You can't use age jokes on yourself.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I'll start with you, Ezzy.
I'm going to cheer Dustin Penner. He had a goal earlier this week, but I'm going to cheer him for the simple fact that every year he's a clutch playoff performer from Winkler, Manitoba, and, more importantly, he proves that you can enjoy the finer things in life like pancakes and all of the great food that you can have out there, still be a big man, and still get the job done. So, cheering Dustin Penner and buttermilk pancakes.
I'm glad that you're cheering pancakes as well.
I don't know how I follow that up. Should I cheer syrup and butter?
That would work.
As long as it's not an outside condiment.
Yeah. I'm actually going to cheer Peter Chiarelli. I think he has done an incredible job with the Boston Bruins, having moved over from Ottawa Senators, signing Zdeno Chara immediately as his first order of business, and building that team without a ton of fanfare. I love his expression and his intensity and watching the games with Cam Neely, and I think he's a top five NHL GM hands down. I think he should be in the discussion with guys like Kenny Holland. I think he's that good, and I think he deserves credit, and that gets my cheer today.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer St. Louis Blues forward Andy McDonald and wish him best of luck with all of his health issues. He retired after 12 NHL seasons, largely to deal with post-concussion issues. He had five known concussions over the course of his career, and at the age of 35, he sat down with his family and decided it wasn't worth the risk of continuing to play and risking it to get any more concussions. So I'm going to cheer him and wish him the best going forward.
I'm surprised you didn't cheer McDonald's.
Well, that would have been clever to do it that way as well.
And dollar drink days.
Yes.
And the pancakes. The pancakes.
And the syrup. Exactly.
Remus loves the McGriddle.
Remus better be better next week, because I was not impressed with this week's performance.
Hustler wouldn't be happy with that performance.
Rick Ralph would have kicked you out of here hours ago.
That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins, Dave Faulkner, a scout with the Prince Albert Raiders, and Andrew Gross from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on illegalcurve.com, on iTunes, and on tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. For producer Michael Remus and for producer Tim, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.